Today on ABCDTOS, By Any Other Name.
Welcome, everybody, to ABCDTOS. This is the podcast where we take your very favorite TV show, Star Trek, the original series, and we discuss every episode in alphabetical order, from All Our Yesterdays all the way to Wolf in the Fold. I'm Tom Taylor.
I'm John Engel.
I'm Joe Mazel.
I'm Pete the Retailer.
And today we are talking about the Season 2 episode, By Any Other Name. It was not written by somebody named Other Name.
Right.
That's the name of the
What's the name of that episode?
It's By Any Other Name.
So what's its name?
Forget it. By Any Other
Name. Any Other Name, Joe. You don't need to know. Any old name works.
But Abbott, I don't understand how it doesn't have a name.
Ironically, I can never remember that this is the name of this episode. I know that there's an episode called By Any Other Name, and I know the basics of what happened in this episode, and I just would never, if you just are like oh, what happens in By Any Other Name? I'd be like, oh, I don't know. Is that the one where Dr. Pulaski and the other thing? No, that's the...
Is there in truth no beauty to the world of the thing?
Yeah, is the world hollow? Have I touched the sky? I don't know. So that's it. Starting out watching this one for this, I was like, yeah, all right, By Any Other Name, I have no idea. And then I start watching it, I'm like, oh, okay. And then even at the very beginning of the episode, I'm like, okay, aliens take over the ship, could be anything still. Like, you know, I'm like, oh, okay, no, there we go. All right. Now I remember. Dodecahedrons.
Right. All right, the guy from Forbidden Planet, okay.
Right, yeah.
Not you, Pete, the guy on the episode, yeah.
Joe.
Yeah, you mean me.
Right.
Here's the Google. When the USS Enterprise is hijacked, the crew unwillingly become part of an intergalactic invasion force. Spearheading the takeover are the Andromedans, also a race with the chilling ability to transform matter. That's not the best description.
Yeah, these Google descriptions aren't really doing it.
Yeah.
Teach them how to kiss, teach them how to get drunk, the end.
Hi,
that's what the episode's about.
My name is Pete Retailer, and I'm a Milky Way-in. That's really not specific. Yeah. Like, you know, I'm going to put that, I'm going to write you a letter, right? You know, like, to Tom Taylor, Milky Way. Yeah. It'll get there eventually.
Speaking of which, I can only assume that Tom hates this episode because they're the Kelvins.
Yeah, it's the Kelvin timeline, Tom.
This is the Kelvin timeline.
I didn't even think of that. I don't know what you're talking about.
I think you should, as your, like, trademark, you should say Kelvin like Dave from the Chipmunks. Like, every time that we bring
Kelvin!
That's Tom's trademark.
I'm going to work that in from now on.
Okay. We'll just do it once. We'll make it a sound bite. There you go.
There you go. Perfect.
Just drop it in.
They beam down to a planet to check out. There's a distress call. There's a landing party of Kirk. The Netflix description was much more succinct. It was like, Kirk and some red shirts go.
Yeah.
It's Kirk, McCoy, Spock, and then two red shirts, a man and a woman. They beam down. They look around, and finally they're like, "Oh wait, I'm getting a reading of a person now." And these two. A couple of people show up, and they have special things on their belts that allow them to freeze the crew. And then they announce that they're taking over the ship in order to take over the galaxy.
So they can freeze the crew with these neural, but not their eyes.
Yeah, well, they throw in a little bit of a, like, we can control all of the voluntary nerve impulses or something like that. So it's like, their hearts still beat and they can still breathe and maybe like blinking and their eyes moving. I don't know. But moving your eyes around side eye does seem like a voluntary nerve impulse, but
I just think Shatner couldn't help it. There's no way Shatner can like do nothing in a scene. He's got, just let me move my eyes around a little. Just
the man can act with his eyes alone.
This is a veritable cornucopia of freeze acting, this episode. You get a lot of
Yeah, there's a lot of freeze tag style. Like, we can all learn from it.
No, I was over here.
I like that, DeForest Kelly does a good, like, I'm in the middle of saying something, so I'm going to point. I'm gesticulating,
We got to talk about that then right away. What the hell is he saying to him right at that point in time? Like, right then is not the time to turn around and Spock looks like he's, like, considering what he just said.
Right.
Spock's eyebrows are raised, like,
That's so like what? Their default, you know, like we were talking about last week. Like if you boil down the essence of the McCoy and Spock relationship, they're basically doing it right now. And McCoy is just wagging a finger, being like, you know,
yeah.
But it's like, what, well, like, you know, there was no time for them.
Yeah, the captain is talking to an alien they just met, or they're having a conversation on the side.
They would just be listening, right? That's
you would think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right off the bat with this one, we get a depending on which version you're watching, we get an enhanced establishing shot of the planet, and it's very like it fits again. I'm looking for reasons to complain all the time, and I'm like, yeah, they worked completely with the set as it was and made basically an extrapolation of that, and it's fine. I like it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm worried sure. that by the time this project is over, I'm going to prefer the enhanced editions.
Oh, it might happen.
I think it's already happened for me. I think I'm there. Maybe I've already said that. Mm. I like them.
Yeah.
I like them because, I don't know, I like the pop. There's so much color in this. Like, yeah. It really pops in that opening scene. And you're like, that is an alien planet. Mm. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, we get the Kelvins show up, and my only note for the Kelvins, they wrote, "We rule." They said that at one point. You know, like, we're Kelvins, we rule. But basically, they're like, "Hey, our galaxy is going to explode, or no, radiation is going to make our galaxy terrible. So we're going to take over this one." And Kirk is like, "Well, there's plenty of room. We'll find you some planets." And they're like, "No, we don't do that. We conquer. We rule." And we find out that they were. You know, they want to take over the Enterprise. They crashed. I don't know if they crashed, but they came here on a multi-generation ship. They were born in the void of space. These ones that we've met here.
Mm-hmm.
They got here. They can't get back. So they need to take over the Enterprise, modify it a little bit so it can make the journey back in 300 years. And, then they will go back, tell everybody back in the Andromeda galaxy, hey, we found a new place, let's go. Although I think the ironic thing would be they get there and, you know, after 600 years, like another expedition that was sent to another galaxy already came back and evacuated everybody, and they get back and they're like, where is everybody? And they're like,
yeah,
we found a place.
That's an ending.
Yeah.
Lest we forget, they also turn themselves into humanoids.
Right. Oh yeah, yes, the crazy tentacle creatures, right? Yeah.
Yes, they were. This happens only in Spock's kind of drug-induced description.
Yeah,
he's like, I saw bright colors. I tasted colors, and I felt I could hear. And describes colors. These multi tentacled beasts that are the true forms. In Next Generation, we totally would have seen their true forms at some point.
Oh,
Next Generation and on, we would have gotten one at the end or through in the middle somehow. You know, once every time they got stressed out, every time they you know they were fighting their nature, we would have seen a little you know,
well,
overlay.
Thank you, Captain.
Yeah. That's Galaxy Quest. It's exactly from right. Galaxy Quest.
Oh, it is. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
And, so they take over the Enterprise.
They take over the Enterprise. We get a good. I realize that if you are worried about the quality of your actors, not to say anything, I find most of the actors in this are pretty good. But if you're worried about the quality,
I disagree.
Your actors, a good thing to throw in there is have them be like, oh, I'm new in this body. I don't know. I'm sorry. I've taken over. I've taken over this human form. And what are you saying? Like, you know, you can throw.
I don't
that
know
in
how
there,
to emote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You do that and you have them say human and you're good.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, we get to they try to escape using they're captured on the planet that they beamed. Did we find out the name of the planet that they start out?
I don't know.
No, a planet. Kelvin Colony Planet.
It's a planet.
The unnamed planet. Alpha and Beta Quadrant planets. There's a long list. So Kelvin Colony Planet. Which is unnamed. I wonder what they called it. Like New Kelva. But they're trapped on the planet by the Kelvins, who are able to freeze them, and then they're like, well, we'll get everybody to, you know, we'll take over the ship and all that, because if they beam some people up, they get the usual things where they show up into engineering and take over all the systems and
mm-hmm.
They have our heroes trapped in a prison. They try to escape, and as punishment for that, they try to escape using a bit. This is a weird, like, you know, famously, Star Trek is very much, you know, at the end of the episode, we're back to where we started. There's no continuity necessarily. It's just like a little loop back to, you know, that way you can shuffle them up out of order, more or less. But in a weird, twice in this episode, you get references to stuff that happened in other episodes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I love that.
And including when the prison break, you know, they're trying to break out of the jail cell, and Kirk says something like, "Hey, let's try the thing that we did on Amini R7," which is interesting, because I was mm-hmm. like, "Oh, I wasn't expecting that at all."
Yeah, you never expect them to actually remember stuff that they've done that you've seen them do, because they never ever do that.
What? Because they don't kind of recognize. Troubling, you know, like, they didn't recognize Mr. Atos when he was Septimus. So, like, why would they recognize?
Right. Yeah.
I do like how Kirk responds to the, you know, this information he's given about this energy field at the edge of the galaxy. He's like, yeah, we've been there.
Yeah.
He says it like that. Now, I think what Shatner's trying to do is remember his friend from that episode and how sad that all turned out. But it really just sounds like he's like, yeah, we've been there.
Right.
It was lame.
Well, he's also, I think, trying to deflate the you know, they're being like, oh, edge of the galaxy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But yeah, it's a good little it's very Kirk.
Yeah.
Then they once they're up on the ship, we get a historic moment here. As punishment for trying to break out of prison, they turn the two red shirts. They're like, oh, you will be punished. Get the red shirts. And it's like, well, you know, they try to write it into continuity. You know, they're like, well, look, logically, you guys are necessary. You're essential.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why. I guess maybe for the like, this, I'll keep asking this. I understand why they keep Spock. I understand why they keep Scotty. Not entirely sure why they need to keep Kirk or McCoy. McCoy, yeah. I'll give you, like, well, if something goes wrong with the two or three people that they do have left, how are they going to fix them without McCoy? So great. Okay. But why Kirk?
Not sure.
But yeah, so like as punishment, they turn the two red shirts into dodecahedron.
Styrofoam cube.
Yeah. And
is it like gesso, you think, that's made out of? It kind of crumbles like.
I don't even know.
I don't know.
Is that the stuff you put in a planter with fake flowers or something?
Right.
That's what it looks like to me, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you mean like terracotta?
No, it's like kind of crumbly, spongy stuff.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Right. Yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
It's green often.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to tell what they made it out of. It looks like I don't know.
Like ceiling tiles or something.
Right, yeah.
What's they kind of look like?
I can totally see that being like a, you know, like those moments in like, you know, movies about the early space program where they just kind of like mobilize, they realize what they need and they just mobilize and strip something else down and make a decision. Right. I can see them totally like, oh, we don't have that for this episode. And look at, like, take that drop ceiling and like, you know, they're ripping it down.
Well, I like the idea of them turning them into the ceiling tiles, and then you're like, hey, come down to the basement. Oh, don't mind. That's George up there. And
dampens the sound really well down here.
Writing-wise, that's almost what happened, that they were trying to figure out what, like, apparently originally they had a much more, this episode was a lot darker in its original draft, and they had stuff with the, I'm looking for, it was Jerome Bixby, kind of wrote the thing, and it was all much darker, and he had thrown in they executed 10 Enterprise crew members by opening the shuttle bay doors and letting it get sucked out into space. Kirk actually gets tortured, and they have because it's a galaxy ship, they have like, all right, well, we're gonna need more human slaves, so you guys get paired off, we're gonna create mating couples. Apparently,
but then they decided the back half of the episode should be a comedy instead.
Well, yeah, essentially, NBC was just like, no, that's all bad. Like, you can't do any of that. And so Gene Kuhn stepped in and was just like, let's make it funny, like, which I think works.
Very well mind.
Well, I definitely think the cubes, or whatever we want to call those, or is more interesting than just blowing people out of a door, you know? Like,
Once they got back, they're like, well, how do we do this? And they couldn't figure it out. And apparently on Roddenberry's desk, there was an onyx dodecahedron sculpture from Mexico. And he was just like, right. "Well, what if they just get turned into this?" And they were like, "All right, we'll get somebody to work on it." So like that.
That's crazy.
It works. It stands out. Like this is like I said. If you told me this episode by name, I wouldn't remember it. But when you'd be like, "Hey, the one where they get turned into dodecahedrons," I'm like, "Oh yeah."
Yeah. And it's totally crazy that it's the, even as a kid, it like, I remember the first time I saw this and I was like, oh, there's a black man and a white woman and they've both been, and I kind of got at that point, you know, I'm watching this in like the late 70s or something. And I get that, oh, in that era of TV, they were paying attention to this stuff. They were, I'm like, okay, so you have two, you know, minorities, like who's going to survive this? Like who's going to make it out? And I remember not remembering the next five times I watched. I was like, wait, does the woman come back? Does the guy come back?
It'd be interesting if it was like a, you know, flip a coin, like Clue, alternate endings, you know?
Yeah.
Each time you watch it, it could be somebody different.
But I wonder how much thought went into that. Cause like whoever does come back doesn't do anything really for the rest of the episode.
Boy,
yeah, well, I kind of,
he doesn't do anything while he's on screen. Nah, that guy is about as wooden. It's the weirdest thing. Like
he was already a dodecahedron.
Oh, hey.
He gives the weirdest performance. He's like about to, something really bad's about to happen to him. His face is just as stony as possible. Yeah, and then used the same shot when he
did.
I'm almost positive.
I think you're right.
It's like, show him having been affected by this somehow, please. This is not, surely that upset him in some way.
Captain, I'm all right.
Unless the idea is that nothing changes. Literally, to him, it was like nothing happened. I don't know.
Oh, maybe.
Well,
I have to say, I did specifically note that Yeoman Thompson was one of the worst actresses I've seen on Star Trek thus far.
Yeah, she wasn't very good either. Yeah.
We'll come back to her in a second.
She had it coming.
I'm trying to figure out if this, no, okay. In my head, I'm like, all right, well, this is 68. Like, so I was concocting a conspiracy theory because I'm like, well, you don't know which one, you know, basically they get turned into cubes. One of them gets crushed. And then when they come back, they just reused a shot of him. Even though if you look, it's apparently the cube like from the wrong hand. Like when you pick them up, the one in his right hand is the man's cube. The man is dodecahedron. That's an advertising campaign for. When they bring him back, they just reuse the same shot. So I'm like, was that like in post? Did they bring back the woman? And then I'm like, if this aired in 68, did they do like, is this a conscience thing where they're like, well,
right.
Like MLK got assassinated and they're like, well, we don't want to just kill the black guy right away. Like, let's. But it was timing is off. This MLK was April of 68, and this one aired in February of 68. So my conspiracy theory is deflated. But
they might have still just been thinking about that. Maybe we shouldn't kill the black guy. And then they don't want to shoot a pickup shot. They're not going to get back together to get a reaction shot from him. So they just use the shot.
Right.
Interesting.
And it's a let's dive into the. You mentioned that Thompson, Yeoman Thompson, is one of the worst actresses you've ever seen. She is played by Julie Cobb, the daughter of Lee J. Cobb.
Wow.
And
he's a good actor.
Right?
He's a very good actor.
You would think that some of it, she was also, this is her, like, sometimes I'll go off on this weird, like, this hard to explain tangential thing with the in Doctor Who that the 10th Doctor married the daughter of the 5th Doctor, and then they met when she played the daughter of the Doctor on an episode called The Doctor's Daughter, and then they had a daughter. In real life, they have a daughter who is both the Doctor's daughter and the daughter of the Doctor's daughter and the grand. Anyway, Julie Cobb is the daughter of Lee J. Cobb. She's the mother of. Rosemary Morgan, who just guest starred on an episode of Voyager. It was an episode of Voyager called The Shoot. And she was kind of featured actor in that and didn't do that much else, but ties to Star Trek that way. And then she was also the ex-wife of James Cromwell, who plays Zefram Cochrane. And it's a weird, weird tie. She's very, very much a Star Trek family.
Hmm.
Did a couple of other things apparently, but I don't know. I'm not surprised she didn't get that much acting work. post this, other than I'm sure she was just kind of riding riding on her name.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of, she was in some movies, TV shows. She was in Defending Your Life.
Oh, weird.
TV movie versions of Salem's Lot and Brave New World. That seems about right.
Well, wow. Salem's Lot only had a TV version.
Yeah, that was. Right, yeah.
But still, that's what I mean. Anyway. But the other, I couldn't find out much else for the other, the guy who played, I closed his name already.
Uh-oh. I don't know.
But the guy who survives as a cube and gets reconstituted. And then I'm assuming they turned him
Lieutenant Shay.
Shay, there you go.
Wait, did he get turned back again?
I'm assuming, right? When they beamed everybody back up, they're like, psych, you know.
Yeah. Poor guy. It's like, at least I'll never have to go through that again. God.
Oh, we should note, Thompson, was that her name?
Yeah.
She's the first woman to die on the show as we were watching it.
Yeah.
Really?
She's the only female red shirt death throughout the whole series.
Wow.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think there's other kind of, dramatic...
Joan Collins something like that.
Exactly. Edith Keeler and stuff like that. But as far as just like, disposable crew members, this is the only woman red shirt to die, apparently. Wow. We will back that up as we go through. But
we do have 8 dead crew so far, and 7 of them are red shirts.
Hmm.
Yeah, we had no deaths on the last episode. We didn't talk about it. There were no deaths of crew members on the last episode.
Right.
Just some stinky barbarian gladiators.
And one first citizen.
Now, does it count as a red shirt death if they're in cube form?
I think it does. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, the cube isn't red. Maybe the cube should have been red.
Oh, that's true. I kept wondering, he tosses those things on the ground. Like, he crushes one, and that's how he kills her.
Right.
But, he tosses one. Like, how damaged could one of those things be, and then you could still come fully back?
I say you could beam it up. I think you could beam that powder up.
Yeah, I'm confused.
Oh, yeah,
why couldn't they reconstitute it from a powder? I think they could if they wanted to. They were just being really kind of like, technically, it would take some work.
None of them
I guess if you lost even a little bit of powder.
Listen, Kirk, who knows we have places to go. Just assume they're dead.
A crew member. Oh, no.
What if you're missing just like an ounce of powder? What happens then?
Is your pinky gone
or is your essence less?
Yeah.
I have less. I feel just kind of fatigued these days.
Or you just become suddenly you're like 5'4" or something. It's just like a shrunken down. Like, we didn't have enough to make all of you.
Oh, I love the idea that you have a squeaky voice and all that stuff. Yeah. I do want to talk about Haynar.
Haynar. Mm-hmm.
And I say it that way because
he's a rock star. Haynar.
Well, I say it that way because immediately upon hearing his name, I've not been able to get out of my head De La Soul's talking about Hey Love. So since we're talking about Haynar. Also, when he appears, never any other time really, but the very first shot of him, I swear to God, I was like Kevin McDonald from Kids in the Hall. And I was ready for well, Captain Kirk, just coming some Kevin McDonald. I really thought Haynar was Kevin McDonald for a split
second. That would have been great.
He totally should have been. Well, now that we have the technology to do that kind of a thing, we can digitally reinsert him.
Right.
Yeah. Please.
Funny, it's not Kevin McDonald. It's Haynar is an actor named Stuart Moss, who we will find. But born in Chicago, Tom. There you go. Died in Walla Walla, Washington.
Oh, that's funny.
That's a funny.
Funny thing to say.
It's up there with Cucamonga.
We're all laughing.
We will rediscover Stuart Moss several months from now when we get to the Naked Time, because he plays a crew member. He plays Lieutenant Tormelin. Yeah. In there, so everybody write down Stuart Moss.
All right.
The all the people have something interesting about them behind the scenes.
That Tomar, is that his name, the tall one with the pink thing? He's in a bunch of Robert Altman movies. I immediately recognized him.
And weirdly, maybe is this a stereotype, is this a behind the scenes thing? So he's in here, he plays Tomar, who goes toe-to-toe with Scotty drinking until Scotty finally drinks him under the table.
Mm-hmm.
In McCabe and Mrs. Miller, he plays the town drunk. In Popeye, he plays Bill Barnacle, the town drunk.
Yep.
Like, he just keeps showing up. It's like, oh, we need a drunk guy. Get Robert Fortier.
And you guys know what Tomar means, right?
Yeah. Well, I didn't until I read it on here.
It means to have a drink. This guy's got a type.
Wow.
It's like he's a regular William Hootkins. So he's in a ton of stuff. I saw somewhere he was listed as, where can I confirm this? Maybe I'll look him up. I saw he was the gangster in the kind of dream sequence in not The Sound of Music. What's the
Guys and Dolls?
No, what's the movie about where people can't deal with talkies?
Singing in the Rain.
Oh, I couldn't remember that.
Okay, now I totally know who you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, Singing in the Rain, gangster in Broadway Melody Ballet.
The one that's flipping the coin?
I think so. I mean, if you look at his face, he could be that. I don't know if he's just a gangster or if he's that specific gangster. But
yeah, because I think that guy might be shorter, actually. Mm. The guy who's flipping the coin might be kind of a little guy. Mm. I can't remember for sure. But
still, he's got to dance. Busted.
But yeah.
Gotta dance.
Thank you, gentlemen.
We got we mentioned this before, but Rojan, the leader of the Kelvins, he's Dr. Ostro, the doctor from Forbidden Planet.
Mm-hmm.
Kalinda. I don't know why I want to say it like
Barbara Boucher.
Yeah, Barbara Boucher, who was Money Penny in Casino Royale, not the recent one, but the original one.
Not the good one.
Well, depends on who you ask.
Well, yeah, I guess that's true.
She did about 1,000 giallo films.
Yeah, she moved to Italy and just became an actress there, and it was been in some stuff more recently too. And interesting, she was in what's it called?
She looks just like Sansa Stark from Game of Thrones.
She does.
Yeah, she does look like. Why am I blanking out her name? Not Maisie Williams. I can't remember.
Yeah, the other one.
The one that's married to the Jonas brother.
Yes.
Yes.
Right. and that's as much as we'll ever talk about.
Yep.
Rojan, Kalinda, Hanar, Tomar. I thought I had somebody. Oh, Yeoman Thompson. Yeah. Maybe that's it. Maybe that is it for the interesting people. Oh, Drea. It was played by Leslie Dalton, who didn't do much interesting stuff. I was sad to find it. Yeah,
is she related to Timothy Dalton?
Leslie Dalton does not say. I doubt it. She's from Weymouth, Massachusetts. So
she reminded me of Jenna Malone, actress Jenna Malone. Yeah. And I looked just to see if maybe she was her mother, but no.
I could see that.
Very similar to me.
Sophie Turner, by the way.
Yeah, that's there you go.
Sophie Turner, thank you.
Now look up which Jonas brother.
Yeah. And order me a pizza.
I'll tell you, this is up your alley, Joe, that actually Leslie Dalton was a featured player on The Gold Diggers on Dean Martin's variety show.
Oh, that's right. I did see that too. Forgot.
And she was in, a handful of other stuff. She was a regular on The Guiding Light for a while, stuff like that. I do like all those people. I probably like Rojan the least, but all the rest of them, I'm like, all right, there's no characters that I hate here.
Yeah. I think I'm deeply in love with Kalinda. Does that make a difference?
I think that's only natural.
Yeah.
That proves that you are human.
Maybe you should apologize to her.
Costume design good in this episode.
Yeah. I think she's got her dress on backwards.
You're not allowed to see her navel, of course.
Right.
Is she in, let me see if the, I'll look up Kalinda on memory beta, see if they would go back to that character at all.
How pregnant is she by the end of the episode?
In the comic Legacy, what does it have in the,
oh, I don't want to know.
Oh, here we go. Legacy is a really touchy word here.
The late 26th century.
Rojan's.
Kalinda still lived on the planet with Rojan and the rest of the Kelvins. Their peaceful farming community was briefly disrupted by Prefect Tamar, sent to discover why the Kelvins had abandoned their military mission. Kalinda turned Tamar into a cube and stored him in the barn.
They ripped that off a Little House on the Prairie. We all saw that one.
So that's nice.
Man.
all that? So they. Here's the thing. We don't really mention. We didn't really talk about much of the plot about how they basically defeat them with like they've taken human form. Let's get drunk, do drugs, make out. Let's do all the human things, and then they'll
let's get real human in here.
Yeah.
Well, I like that the Kevin McDonald guy. It's sort of like, well, for him, we'll just annoy him with endless doctor appointments.
Well, no,
yeah,
like that McCoy, seems really specific. Like, that was like Gene O'Koon
drugs to make him irritable. He's basically giving him a stimulant to make him kind of crash and make him irritable.
See, like roid raging. It's like roid raging.
Yeah, essentially.
Yeah, isn't that kind of cheating though? Everybody else had to like get him drunk or make out with him or whatever.
Right,
like,
you know everybody plays to their strengths.
I guess so. You're right.
Yeah, all bones.
Oh, and by the way, the Kirk
drugs.
Yeah.
The initial Kirk seduction of Kalinda just made me incredibly uncomfortable.
It's so weird.
Like kissing her shoulder, like, dude, come on. Yeah. Because it's not even like,
fire a green
it's not even like a 60s, like, I'm a man and I take a woman. It's just sort of like, even for that time period, it's like, what are you doing? Like, if you just grabbed her and kissed her, it would have been far more acceptable. Yeah, and that wouldn't be acceptable, guys.
Right, he puts his finger on her first, just like a finger on her shoulder. Is this where I hit you? First of all, and his opening line is this where I hit you?
Yeah.
And then he kisses her on the spot where he did hit her. Oh, yeah, it's weird. But my thought was, I guess it's because we've done two episodes in a row where Kurt gets laid. Okay, so my thought in this one was, wouldn't it have been nice if if Bones would have been, just anybody else could have done this? Wouldn't it have been funny, especially because they decided to make a comedic episode? This isn't funny, but wouldn't it have been funny if for some reason Bones was the guy that had to seduce her?
And if he like campaigned for that, if he was like, come on, Jim, they've never seen humans, but they don't know what humans are supposed to look like. I could be the hot one this one time. Come on.
Just let me do it. Come on.
Just think about the things he would say and how he would say them. It's great. Then she doesn't know better. It's seduction. She's like, what is this? It's an apology. Here you go. See, that would have been funny. This is not funny at all. The other stuff's pretty funny.
Now give me $10.
Are there? I can't think. I can think of episodes, obviously, where Spock is the love interest. I think there's Scotty, there's a Chekhov.
McCoy has some like gentlemanly flirtation
and man like, trap in the abstract.
Oh yeah,
you're right. That's like
which McCoy?
Right?
The Black Box Theater one. Third season.
Oh, yeah.
The Empath.
See, again, you could have told me that by any other name. You told him, the Empath. That's the one with the dodecahedron. Yeah. Like, oh, okay, cool.
And then in Shore Leave, he's with that. He's not with her, but he's being a nice, gentlemanly first date kind of guy.
All right,
it seems
until
like.
He gets shish kebabbed by a knight with a lance. Mm.
That's right. That's what happens.
Lance the knight.
Yeah,
I do feel like this would have been a I'm just thinking of this, so maybe I'm off base, but this would have been a Dr. Crusher job. They would have flipped the genders, I think, in TNG, and Dr. Crusher might have been the one that had to. You know, seduce, which is interesting. It's better. It's a turn, it's a flip of roles.
Well, this is a TNG episode, isn't it? Don't they do exactly this thing in an episode where there's ambassadors there who are trying to, I don't think the crew knows it, but they're trying to learn about like human, I don't know, emotions and stuff. And I was here to learn how to be pissed off. Right. I was here to learn how to fall in love, and stuff like that.
Yeah, there's an Andorian. Is there an Andorian there? It's an early episode, isn't it?
I think it's a later one. Like, I think I could be mixing it up, but like Picard is trapped. Like they fake a disaster where he's trapped with a woman and they fall in love, or he's supposed to fall in love with her. And she's like, oh, you didn't fall in love with me. I was trying to learn about love. Like that kind of thing.
I feel like I should know, but.
Maybe you shouldn't.
To be fair, Star Trek The Next Generation gender flips just as much as they decide, well, how about Riker seduces her?
Yeah, I mean, Riker's the obvious choice, but then there were so many times where there'd be this alien that Dr. Crusher would be like, that guy's interesting, I don't know. Yeah. It's just occurring to me. But yeah, you're right. I mean, Riker would have been the obvious choice for this job.
They certainly relied on that a lot.
Yes, they did.
Scenario, is I'm assuming, because he's completely non-essential, as much as I love him, is Wesley a cube here? And so she's like, well, in order to save my...
She'll do anything. Yeah.
To reconstitute my son. That's the Lifetime movie version of it.
Right. Not without my reconstituted son.
Yeah.
We should point out, too, we're only like, what, 10 episodes into the show? Mm-hmm. And this is the second time the crew of the Enterprise has taught people how to make out.
Yeah.
Like, they brought that entire notion to a new
saving them.
Race.
By saving
them. Well, I mean, that is the 5-year mission. Out.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're welcome, strange race.
Let's see what my there's a weird air of, like, as they're going through cubing people, there's a weird, and it could just be
they're like, called Cubano.
It did have a weird air of like corporate layoffs. It's just like, all right, well, we've decided that you're non-essential anymore. It's like, boop, and like, you know.
It's coming, guys.
Hey, everybody, we're recording this in the summer of 2020.
Man, they're going to do it, man. It's coming.
It's
happened to Hendrix yesterday.
It does seem like, you know, that's been kind of thing that's been going on for a while where, you know, venture capital, you know, capitalist firms will take something over and eliminate all the redundancies and mine it for all of its profits. And so it's a little bit like that. I did like the... it's not explicitly said, but this is a bit of a stretch. So, you know, at the end of this, they turn the ship around and they just, you know, drop off. Presumably they drop off the Kelvins back on their little colony planet, send off a robot ship, which it seems like a convenient, like, well, we need to wrap this up. We'll just send a robot out to send your message. It's cool. But using the technology advances that they made to the Enterprise, so it'll only take 300 years for the robot ship to get there. And presumably, those technological advances were studied and adopted by Starfleet, because then speaking of Next Gen, there's a point in Next Gen where they mention that to get to the next galaxy would take 300 years or something like that. So there's a certain amount of technological evolution that would happen naturally over, you know, 100 years or so, whatever. But there's also the, you know, I like that we can just make that into canon. Like, oh, well, we don't have to worry about what they brought back, because maybe they brought it back, they studied it, they adapted it, and now they can get places faster.
The Rojan drive.
Exactly.
But, you know, for here, though, you know, it's really hard. It's very difficult for them to get to that next galaxy. I mean, it's a real strain to get to Andromeda.
Right.
For them.
Yeah.
Oh, I love how that went completely nowhere.
I got you. All right. It took me a second.
Oh, man.
A strain. I just got it.
I expected huge laughs. Sorry. That was...
Somebody was just... Wait, wasn't somebody... Was it from this one or the last episode? I think somebody was actually in Andromeda Strain, right?
Maybe.
There was a... this is going to be me kind of pawing through Memory Alpha for a bit. But somebody was in Andromeda Strain, I think, and either this episode or the last episode that we did.
I totally believe that.
I haven't seen that movie in a long time. And I have that weird octagonal... LP of it. I'm more familiar with the score than I am the movie. But I should watch the movie again sometime soon. It's been a
very cool movie.
How did we feel about James Doohan's drunk acting?
it's great.
It's charming.
I like it.
That
I like it.
Really did make me want to drink. Like, that'll happen.
I mean,
a lot of
me
stuff.
Being conscious makes me want to drink. Well, that's like
a big glass of green.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Again, going back to Next Gen, like, I love, apparently they brought back in that episode with Scotty of Next Gen, that like he has a moment at the bar with Data, of all people. You know, he pulls out kind of the same type of thing, and he's like, well, it's green. Which
That's
is
beautiful.
Nice. See, a little bit, this is making me... I'm worried that by the end of this experiment, I keep calling it an experiment, I'm worried that by the end I will want to rewatch all of Next Gen, which is not the worst thing in the world.
No. You can do a lot worse.
I do it all the time. Yet I can't remember that episode that Tom's talking about. Maybe next time I'll remember it.
Maybe.
My next watch through. But speaking of acting, I have an acting question for you guys. So, man, I just had the worst Chekhov. Okay, God, man, my brain just stopped for a second. So Chekhov's about to get reduced down to a cube.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He acts like he has no idea what's going on. He's sitting in that chair looking up at that guy like, say, mister, what's happening? What's going on here? Yeah. It's the weirdest, like, lack of acting. I want people to have fear in their eyes in these moments. Yeah. I want there to be some sort of reaction. There's
He's like, well, I'm essential. they're not coming to zap me. They're coming to zap the people near me, right? Because I'm essential.
They just want to ask me something.
Yeah, but doesn't he look like right at him? I feel like there's even like two cuts where it's like almost comedic, like that he's not reacting to me. But maybe it's the cuts that are telling me that. Maybe it's not his acting that's the problem. It's the fact that they decided to cut twice and really telegraph what was about to happen. I don't know though. But I'm just like, man, dude. Show a little fear. Just give me a little something here. But
thanks, Chekhov.
There's one that we haven't gotten to yet. I in the background, I have the crossover between the Andromeda Strain and the original series. Three characters that we will, including this one, three characters that we've already come across. So we've got from last week's episode. Bart LaRue, who played the TV announcer, the guy who's sitting there in the suit and tie with the microphone doing the announcing.
Yeah.
He's in Andromeda Strain.
Oh, wow.
Gary Wahlberg, who played Commander Hansen in Balance of Terror, the guy who on the outpost who's all destroyed.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's in Andromeda Strain. Hmm. And Kermit Murdoch, the excellently named Kermit Murdoch, who played the prosecutor in All Our Yesterdays. He was in the Andromeda Strain. So look at that.
Hmm. Oh, my God. He totally was. He's the only one that you just mentioned that I can totally picture him in the Andromeda Strain.
Tom, I think you said that on the episode.
Maybe.
Yeah. Did I?
I'd wager that you did.
I'm so
you're the kind of guy who would.
In between when we did.
No, I think I remember that now. Yeah.
Wow.
In between when we did that episode and now, I've watched more of Andromeda Strain than I had in years. So.
Yeah.
There you go.
I watched several minutes of Andromeda Strain. Here's the thing. This could be a fun game. You can maybe. I always like there's parts of Star Wars that do this to me where I'll like part of the dialogue will reference either like a song or a band name. And I'll be like, if I was making a mixtape, if this was like 1994 and I was making a mixtape, I would totally sample that and then put the song by them after that. let's if you can, I know you guys seem like you'd be down for this, so I wanted, let's make this a game. If we notice any time that happens, because in this one when the one Kelvin is wants to learn about food and Kirk is like, all right, Bones, it was your idea, you show him, and he gets up and he's like, all right, well, I'll show you how to work the selector. And then I really just wanted to, you know, go into like too much pressure or on my radio. So let's keep an eye out for how we can maybe actually make the mixtape at some point, but let's keep an eye out for bands or songs that come up in the dialogue.
Okay.
Excellent.
Another background note, the Gene Roddenberry apparently wrote a TV episode for like, some, you know, the Texaco home theater or something like that, called The Secret Weapon of 117.
Right.
Which The Secret Weapon of 117 for Chevron Hall of Stars. That wasn't that far off.
No, you were not.
In 1956. It was his first ever produced science fiction script, and it was it featured a pair of aliens. The male alien was Ricardo Montalban.
Hey.
And who disguise themselves as humans to study Earth people, but they become overwhelmed by the sensations and experiences of their new host bodies and decide to remain human. So he's dipping back into, I mean, it's not.
Well, humanoid host bodies is old hat for Star Trek, almost from the Jump Street.
Yeah. And I mean, in science fiction in general, it's like, oh, like, you know, people becoming human and then, oh, they're like human. Humans are the best, aren't we? If you become human a little bit, you'll just love being human.
We eat so much food. We get so drunk.
Yeah.
I like the description that they're overwhelmed by them, so they decide to stay.
Right.
This is overwhelming. Right, yeah.
This
it's
is so crazy.
Crazy.
I have to do this forever.
Yeah.
I would like to see the again. This is there's so many. Looking at, I keep bringing up Space Seed, but going back and seeing, you know, like, wow, it's so neat that they just like Space Seed totally seems like a setup for a sequel down the line, down the road. You know, they even say like, mm-hmm. I'd love to come back and visit, you know, see what we planted with that Space Seed.
Yeah.
So many episodes like have that extra potential there. They're like so many episodes just leave little dangling things like, you know, like we've already come across two potential, you know, offspring of the main crew. And again, here is another like, you know, him dropping them off. Essentially the same setup as Space Seed. Just you're like, all right, we're going to drop these aliens off on a planet. Have at it.
Yeah.
I wonder, you know, we got Ricardo Montalban once played a character just like this guy.
Mm-hmm.
If so, let's say they say, hey, get Ricardo, you know, say they didn't have Space Seed. They didn't cast him in that. Let's have him come back and play this role again, basically, for this Star Trek episode. Was Montalban's charisma the reason that they chose Space Seed? Or would this have been the wrath of this guy instead, right. You know?
The
wrath of the Rojian. That would sound too much like a kaiju movie. But
it does.
But you wonder, like, could this have been the sequel? It would have been the exact same thing. That's all it had to be. Like,
right.
Literally, you could do the exact same thing. And maybe he gets buffed, too. You know, maybe he
totally.
Does some lifting there on that planet.
You get the, you know, like, that explains his crew better a little bit.
Of course, it doesn't explain why would he want revenge on Kirk. Kirk didn't do anything wrong here at all. Yeah. He's just like, hey, you like this. Now stay here on this planet that we found you on. So there really wouldn't be much of that.
Unless Kalinda's pregnant with Kirk's baby, and then he's all furious about that.
Well, no, then Kirk's baby's the one that wants to kill him.
Oh.
There you go.
So there's David.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, see, this
David
is starting to get crazy.
Oh, my God. Aggressor. Oh, I like it. See, again, I think my understanding is the main reason, other than Ricardo Montalban's charisma, I think, like, as far as I can recall, Space Seed and maybe, I want to say, Gamesters of Triskelion are the only ones that end with, like, and what's going to happen? And, like, you know, like, looking up, you know, like, Space Seed is literally just like, I'd love to come back and visit this in, like, you know, 20 years and see what happened. And we'll get to Gamesters, but that ends with, like, you know, basically her looking up at the sky and kind of being wistful. I can't think of any other examples of things like that set up so well. Space Seed almost seems like it was written as a prequel because it sets up Wrath of Khan too well.
Mm-hmm.
So like these we have to dig a tiny bit, but that I'm assuming that somebody just watched, you know, Star Trek when they were younger and they're like, yeah, you know, like they just totally seem like they never fulfilled that promise. What's Montalban doing? Get me him on the phone.
He's on TV.
I think that's all I had for notes. How do we, do you guys have any other specifics or, Shakespeare title, by the way. Oh, not only Shakespeare title, but Shakespeare title that is actually said in the dialogue.
Oh yeah. There you go.
Like full on quoting
that's
Shakespeare.
Exciting.
Yeah.
In my head, you know, every other Star Trek episode is named after a Shakespeare quote, but it's only like four or five or something like that. But starting with where no man has gone before, have we had any title mentioned in the episode yet? I don't think so.
No, not that I can recall. I will say that I found the title to be really forced, like somebody wanted to make a Shakespeare reference more than it fit.
Yeah.
That might be why you can't remember the title of the episode. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
What does that exactly have to do? I guess because
remember there's the one part where they're talking about a flower and I don't know.
Yeah. I guess.
But,
so.
Yeah. I can't think of any other examples other than, you know, just purely as a, you know, a secondary pilot, like where no man has gone before gets it because they say it in the kind of the preamble.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Conscience of the, maybe all the, on the Shakespeare ones, but we'll see.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
Conscious of the King, for sure, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
Space Seed does, as you've already said, but nothing we've gone through before.
Oh, yeah, what was I just talking about? All right, so we'll have to keep track of that title. You know what? I'm going to make a note in the spreadsheet.
Oh, nice.
It truly was a city on the edge of forever. You could just do, all you have to do is put "it truly was" in front of a title, and
you can
get that line into your movie.
Your perfect setup. I will say that I never, thanks to this episode, I never, if in conversation, if I'm saying, "Oh yeah, you and me," I immediately go into "put him right under the table." Every single time. You can ask my son, you can ask my wife, they are sick of it. But I'm going to keep doing it.
I mean, we were talking about his drunk acting, but we should say that this is the most Scottish that Scott has been so far.
Yeah.
Not only is his room got a bunch of Scottish decor, but the score has like bagpipey. I don't know if it's technically bagpipes, but it's like supposed to sound bagpipey. And his brogue gets thicker. As he gets drunker, but it's great. I think it's really fun.
What was he saving that whiskey for, do you think? He gets very emotional about that bottle.
For when he becomes a captain, ironically.
Oh, maybe.
Oh, wow.
That was never going to happen because he does so much drinking.
Yeah.
That's it. Oh, my gosh. Wow. Oh, man. Poor Scotty.
It's a good thing he just went ahead and drank it.
You know, we haven't really talked about this before. But, like, do you think at one point there was a sort of there's just like a list of characters, like, all right, we got Kirk, then it's alien, Southern guy, Asian guy, African-American woman, Russian dude, Scott. And like, as they're deciding to name these people, eventually they just got to Scott, and it was just like, you know what, Scott's fine. I gotta go home. I gotta pick up my kids from soccer.
It names itself.
Like, Scott's a name. We could just stick with that, right?
Is it his first name? No, it's his last name. Don't worry about it.
We can't call him Asian, so let's just call him Scott. Come on. Lieutenant Asian. I think this is the, according to Memory Alpha, it looks like this is the only time that we see Scotty's room. And they really went all out that it's like, it's got a kilt, sporran, the little baggy kilt, little, you know, purse thing, bagpipe.
He has a set of bagpipes. He has
shield,
medieval armor,
claymore, and,
unless you don't fully understand his heritage.
The plaque on the wall, which is apparently it's, drafting tools. That's more of a nod to his, engineering background. But
here's a quote.
Like, they reuse those for a lot of, like, the part of it might be part of a ship and part of it might be part of 3D chess and all that stuff. So
it looked to me, it wasn't in Scotty's room, I think it was in the galley, that there was 3D checkers too. There's one thing with little platforms, and it was all these red and black pods, and I'm like, really?
Kirk gets he gets tossed through the 3D checkers at some point, I think, doesn't he?
Like when they're pretty distinctly blonde headed Kirk, I think.
And again, it's sort of like a not good stunt double for Kirk.
No. Yeah, wait, hang on, I got to reconstitute my stuntman.
Oh, you know, one kind of weird thing about it, and it's one of those little Trek things that drive me crazy, and little, you know, kind of TV production of the era things, period, is that it's like, okay, so actually the set for the galley is pretty big. You know, like when they show the fight scene, it's like, oh, there's this other table there. It's really wide. And it's like, well, why didn't you show us this before? It's like you're going out of your way to make it look as cheap as possible. But it's actually, no, we did a lot of effort, see? It's just not worth it unless we, like, throw an old man through a table.
Well, I don't know if that was... Is that just kind of... Moving the camera was such an ordeal, like lighting and all that stuff. So if they're just, you know... If they're going to do a wide shot, they just have to do a wide shot, you know, so they can have people fighting. And you're not supposed to be able to tell that it's the stuntman. But if they're going to, you know, if they're going to have people talking, they're going to want them up close and personal.
Sure. No, I mean, it makes sense. It's just one of those things that, like...
Everything was a lot bulkier, so it was more of an ordeal to move it around. But, yeah, I agree. You should at least get different angles. Although, they wanted to save those angles for... That way, it could be a different location. If you move the camera over here, we film the sick bay from this way, and then it's, you know, then it becomes, you know, global dentistry. when we have to go to the dentistry department. Sorry, I just also got, I clicked on the Ganymede because Scotty says he gets a mysterious green drink. He found it on Ganymede.
Oh, yeah.
And then the Memory Alpha listing for Ganymede, entry for Ganymede, just has like, yep, Scotty says he found some green drink there. And then in 2366, in the observation lounge of the Enterprise D, there's a painting of Ganymede.
Hey.
That's it. It was like, oh, okay.
It's the planet where they distill green drinks.
Right.
Yeah.
Everyone there, that's what they do.
Yeah. It's their main export.
Also, I want to point out those two, one of them should be dead from that much drinking.
Yeah.
That's a lot of drinking.
Tomar, boy, we got to talk about how he goes down. It's so is this a, this is a, he's an alien.
It's very realistic
kind of thing. He, right. It looks like he purposefully hits his head on the table and then sits up straight and then falls up.
Well, he deactivates.
Yeah, that's what it's
right.
Like.
It does seem like they're like, down. Yeah, they, you know, does not compute. Like they fed him some misinformation.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny though. I'm fine with it completely.
It's weird.
Yeah, I mean it works. With, did you think he's dead? Do you think he drank himself? Because this is like, in theory, I mean, granted, it's, you know, it's a new body, it's an alien thing. Maybe they're more, you know, hardier than human bodies. Mm. But like in theory, this is the first time that he's ever had any drink. He has zero tolerance. And he just went toe-to-toe with Scotty, who drinks, you know, like, every time he's not on camera.
Who drinks like a man who drinks.
Yeah. So I'm going to say that that Tomar is dead.
Yeah.
Fair.
Could be. Mm. If not by the end of this episode, at least soon after.
Well, right. We do have an odd number. We have an odd number of Kelvins, right?
Oh, he's yeah.
Because we have Haynor and Drea, they have to apologize to each other.
Right.
Yeah.
So who's Tomar supposed to apologize to?
Yeah.
We don't need him. He's dead.
So that's, well, either he's dead or he's just like, he's the town drunk. There you go. That's
he's the town drunk.
In all the Robert Altman movies.
Yeah. The planet drunk.
Yeah.
The whole planet.
He actually rigs the thing in Popeye, doesn't he? He's got like his scarf around his neck, and then he's got the shot in his hand, and like he pulls the scarf on the other side to like pulley it up to his mouth.
Right. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's an
exceptional drunk.
He's good at it.
Yeah.
I wonder what. I wonder if they, like I can't help but think that like is, you know, typecasting that they're just like, oh, like. It'll be funny because we'll just get that guy who's drunk all the time to play the drunk.
Right.
It's easier. You don't have to deal with like if he comes in, you know, to play a straight role. Like you just don't have to worry about that. Just play a drunk. You can come in however you want. You know, sleep or don't. We don't care.
Or do you think that's his agent being like, have I got another role for you?
Yeah. And he's like to his agent, he's like, for Christ's sake, how did you get me into this? My liver.
Speaking of moving the camera around, I did have one. This is an outlier. The first two seasons and the beginning of the third, all the episodes of Star Trek were the cinematographer was Jerry Finnerman, except for this one.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Jerry Finnerman was apparently unavailable for an unknown reason. And so they grabbed the DP from Mission Impossible, which was filming next door, and they're like, hey, we need to film an episode. Can you help us out? And so Keith Smith.
Keith Smith?
The Keith Smith. This is the only episode that he shot of Star Trek, which is, I'm trying to see what else did he do besides Mission Impossible in this? Harlem Globetrotters on Gilligan's Island. There you go.
Nice.
Whoa. He was the DP on that. The cinematographer on... Oh, and Castaways on Gilligan's Island.
Mm. Wow.
He did all right.
Mission Impossible, this episode of this. Five episodes of Honey West. Wow. So, I don't know. He's done some stuff. He's done some things. we've done some things. We've talked about this episode. How do we feel about it? Let's put our numbers to the bumpers. I don't know what I'm trying to say here.
Yeah.
How do we feel about this?
Letters to the.
Yeah.
Man, I hadn't even thought about it yet.
I know, me neither.
I actually kind of forgot we were going to do that.
Panicking. I'll just say A+. No, I like this episode because of all the goofy Scotty stuff. And, oh, yeah, because I'm in love with Kalinda. Oh, yeah. I don't know. But, yeah, it is kind of, there's something a little half-baked about it. It does start off with, like, this kind of intriguing concept of, like, oh, my gosh, you're going to travel to another galaxy. And they're being hijacked by these weirdos and stuff. And that's kind of, and it turns into kind of a completely different thing. But I don't hate either half of it. I think it's cool. I think as an episode, though, it kind of, I don't know. It's a little slight and weird. So I'm going to say, I'll say B minus. I feel bad giving it a C. I'll give it a B minus.
All right. I will, as seems to be the case, I'm going back looking through things. No, it's not always the case, but I like this. Maybe I'll just give it a little bit more than you. So I'll go with a flat B because I really did enjoy it. I don't, it has its problems. Oh, I haven't been doing my stupid classification thing.
I thought you dropped it. We did.
You weren't going to say anything.
Yeah, the last two are both kind of engineering. They're both like, you know, there's some ideas there, but they both need work. So they're engineering episodes, especially because this one features Scotty so prominently. So that's appropriate. But I will, I'll give this one a flat B. I was entertained the whole time I was watching it. Is part of that Kalinda? Who knows? But the you know, it never like drags, and it never gets too kind of bogged down by its own concept. And it if anything, it glosses over at the end. It's just like, yeah, well, just go home and we'll send a robot. All right, good night. Like, it's like, wait, I have more questions. Like, if anything, it doesn't fulfill enough, which is it leaves me wanting more, which is good, but it's not peak, so I'm not going to go anywhere any higher than that. I'll give it a fat B.
I'm going with C+. I've found, and it's partially because the last episode we all watched was Bread and Circuses, and Bread and Circuses I found a little dopey, but it moved. This episode just kind of dragged for me, and there is that abrupt left turn to comedy, which sort of, I mean, just doesn't work, particularly in the beginning when you're murdering your own crew, when you're murdering crew members. granted, not much of a crew member, let's be frank. But yeah, it's just like I said, like sort of like I enjoyed Scotty getting drunk a little bit. The Kirk creepy factor really kind of puts this down in the C territory for me too. And as I said, it just doesn't. Normally, like classic Star Trek to me just moves. Like, I can sit down, put one on, and then it's an hour later, and I'm thoroughly entertained. This one, I was kind of checking my watch. Mm-hmm. So, C+ for me, and Kirk's a creep.
Right. We knew that already.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to... I like this episode. That's all lowercase letters. I like it. It's okay. I don't dislike it at all. I do get creeped out. I agree with Joe. I get creeped out by the Kirk bit. I'm tired of Kirk. I wish it was somebody else, something more interesting there. And there's a lot of real estate used for that whole thing.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. And this is dumb, geeky storytelling writer. The stakes are so goddamn high.
Yeah.
They're right. Incredibly high. It's great setup. These guys have one little gadget that screws everybody. That's cool. That's really like, wow. These guys are formidable and they don't give a about us. They have no emotion. So they don't care if they're going to eradicate an entire like galaxy of people. They don't care. Not to mention, they can also turn you into a cube. And then they do that to people we care about. You know, that's kind of the midpoint twist is now we're going to do it to the people that you know and love, not just red shirts. Right. Oh, my God. And then you're right, Joe. It takes this left turn. And I like the comedy. Don't get me wrong. I enjoy it. I think it's fun to watch. But, boy, it takes the second half just goes so far away from the stakes of the first half and says, ha-ha, we'll just do some comical business and solve this. And at the end, the resolution really doesn't match the stakes. Then the resolution becomes, hey, we learned how to kiss, so we're cool now.
Right.
It's like, what the hell? That just doesn't match at all. And so you get this two different ends. And to me, that's a fundamental flaw in the episode.
Well, and to add to your point. Oh, sorry, John, please.
No, go ahead. No, no.
I was just going to say, and to add to your point, not only are they, you know, not only don't they care, but their whole ethos of their society is conquer and, you know, conquer and kill.
Like, they rule.
Yeah, conquer and rule.
Yeah, it's so, man, to be able to extract them from this millennial, like, how long has this been what their society's about? They're talking about passing it on to their heirs, you know, 300 years from now, what, my descendant will finish the journey. And you get the idea that that's the kind of people right. they are. And like yeah. you said, it could have been very, they could have simply just said, sure, Kirk, we'll work with you. We'll talk to Starfleet and figure this out. Except apparently so calcified within their culture to be the, to rule that they won't even consider that for a second. It really is hard to swallow the resolution of this. Like, all it took was some kissing. Right. Just a little yeah. smooch.
Kissing and drinking.
Kissing and drinking.
Cause of and the it's solution like, to all of life's problems.
It's like this could have been an Elvis movie, you know, Star Trek or something. Yeah. But, you know, so to me, it's like that's such a fundamental flaw that I can't give it a very good grade, even though I did enjoy it. So I'm still going to give it a B minus because I think that if they somehow would have balanced this better, this could have been an A episode. I actually think that the setup is amazing. I think that the villains are amazing. That's really that's really well thought out. Hmm. And like I said, I think that idea that they have one gadget that rules us all is incredible.
Well, that just made me think about, like, why not, like, turn all their crew into dodecahedrons to ship them to a different galaxy?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Instead of having a generation ship, which is, I'm assuming is super costly on resources, why not just have, like, all right, we'll send you guys, you know, we'll take a crew, we'll cube them, we'll send them off into, like, either a robot ship, or we'll have, like, one person just be a generational caretaker. And then when they get there, they'll just decube everybody, and they can find our, you know, or why not take, I mean, the scale of this is ridiculous, but why not take everybody in their galaxy and cube them and put them into a thing and just, you know, like Kal-El them off into a different corner of the galaxy somewhere? I guess because they rule. That's
their well, there's also a kind of thing with, like, wait a minute. So why does having a human body give them emotions? Like, these aren't, you know, God creatures. These are, like, you know, these are beings with a physical form. Like, it's sort of, you see it in a lot of Star Trek episodes, but it's not an android made flesh. You know, it's not something that, there's no reason why when they're, like, giant tentacle monsters, they wouldn't have sensations. They would, you know, like it's it's a cute idea, but it's a good idea, and that's why it's been done in a lot of Star Trek episodes, and I would argue mostly better. Like, if you pull at these threads, there's a problem.
Yeah. I should have said that before. I didn't really quite buy the central conceit of the story that because they're in these bodies, they're having to wrestle with their human, experiences and stuff. Right.
Aren't we just now an hour and 10 minutes into this episode starting to really get into some really heavy philosophical stuff? Because I'm sure that, you know, I took a lot of philosophy in college, but to be honest, it didn't all stick that well. I'm sure you could find somebody, a recognizable name in philosophy, who wrote an entire book about the fact that sensation leads to humanity and emotion. And I imagine this makes sense in certain ideology. So just the fact that they have the sensations, that's what they're saying. Mm. That makes them react like humans, which could be true. That could be what it is that makes us reactionary, makes us jealous. You know, I felt the sensation, or I felt this attraction. Well, I don't know if he understands what attraction is as a tentacle monster, but now he looks at her and sees her, you know.
And now that Kalinda looks like Kalinda, some giant ugly tentacle monster. It's like,
he even agrees that she's attractive, right? Like, isn't that question posed to him? And he says, yes, of course she's attractive.
Yeah.
But that might be kind of a new idea to him. So these new ideas make them lose control. The sensations make them kind of lose control, because if you believe such a thing, that's what causes us to respond to the world around us, stimuli. So I don't know. I think it has some merit. I'm not saying I buy into it completely, but I guess I believe it enough for a Star Trek episode.
Cool.
It made me think of, just now talking about it, made me think of what was the All Our Yesterdays again, where like because he was back in time, then Spock started regressing and got
right
and it, like a little bit, it's like, all right, well, what makes us act like us, you know what I mean? Is it these environmental factors? Is it a weird, you know, is it being in our body, the sensation? Is it's an interesting are the Kelvins the Rose that by any other name would I don't know. Well, questions unanswered here. I don't know. I fizzled out on that one. I don't know.
Questions unfinished.
I don't know. I mean, were you starting to touch on it? I mean, we didn't really talk about
the
meaning.
Humans, are the human bodies, are they the Rose?
The other name. Like,
Are they?
It's, yeah.
If a person is a person, even if they're not, you know, even if they're inhabited by a tentacle monster, like, are they not still a human, and do they not still have the same sensations?
Yeah.
Are they the rose that smells the sweet? Are they the stench blossoms?
Man. God,
I'm starting to hear another, what is it, Dimensions? I can't think of that from Hamlet, right? That's more Shakespeare. If you prick me, do I not bleed? Is that
Merchant of Venice, isn't it?
Is it Merchant of Venice? I can't remember.
Yeah, because that's like a Shylock speech.
Right. Shylock, yeah. I know it from To Be or Not to Be. That's what from Huxley, which is To Be or Not to Be. Not from
I know it from The Naked Now. When isn't that doesn't Data talk about that when he hooks up with Tasha Yar?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh, maybe.
Anyway, too much next gen this week. We'll have to come back.
Oh, it's okay.
All right. Well, we wrapped our heads around that one, and guess what that means, guys, everybody, people, friends. We're done with the B's. We're done with the A's the B's. We finished. We're 10 episodes into this, and we're done with two letters already. So we're making progress, and
we're chugging along.
We've done some from season 3, season 1, season 2. Guess what? We're hopping out of that milieu. We're doing something from season 0 essentially, because we've got the Cage. We've got the pilot coming up next week. C starts with Cage. Cage starts with C, and we start the C's with the Cage.
That's good enough for me.
So make sure, if this is the type of thing that you like, if you're enjoying this, rate, review, subscribe. Check out our Patreon page, where once a month we're dropping reviews or discussions of the animated series. And you can find us on all your podcast things. And hopefully you'll keep coming back here for ABCDTOS.
I'm just watching Joe deciding what to say.
And that's how it ends.